Fourth parak of Maseches Rosh Hashanah, where we're dealing with a very important discussion about Rosh Hashanah that falls out on Shabbos. As we mentioned last week, when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, the practice is that outside of the Beis HaMikdash, we refrain from blowing the shofar. And the reason for that is because we're concerned, like the Gemara says in the end, that Shema Yavirenu Dalat Amos Peshus HaRabim, maybe somebody is going to mistakenly carry the shofar outside and inadvertently violate the Isser of Hotzah B'Shabbos. So that's the reason why we don't blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah that falls out on Shabbos. However, the Mishnah says, in the Beis HaMikdash, they did used to blow the shofar even when Rosh Hashanah fell out on Shabbos. Why is that? Rashi explains. The reason why is because Ein Shavus D'Rabbanan B'Mikdash. That's in Rashi, Dibra Maskel, Gzeira Shema Yitlenu. That if we're concerned you're going to carry it, so why aren't we concerned that the Beis HaMikdash as well? Maybe someone's going to carry it there as well. Maybe they're going to go to the shofar blowing teacher and find out how to blow the shofar properly. So Rashi says, no, because Ein Shavuz B'Mikdash. When you come to the Beis HaMikdash, we don't have the Dinim D'Rabbanan do not apply in the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore we are able to blow the shofar as usual, even when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, and there's nothing different that's done in that year in the Beis HaMikdash than would be done on a regular year. So what I want to talk about tonight is this halacha of Ein Shavuz B'Mikdash. It's a very complicated one. I think it's a very interesting one, and it is not so simple to really figure out what the guidelines are of this principle. So we have a principle that Rashi introduces us to, that Ein Shavuz B'Mikdash. We don't apply Dinim D'Rabbanan to the Beis HaMikdash. One important point to be aware of before we begin that discussion is, the only time we say Ein Shavuz B'Mikdash is when you never had the opportunity to do that melacha that needed to be done, or to do that violation mid'Rabbanan to be done before Shabbos started. So then we say, we don't worry about the Din D'Rabbanan, because after all it's Shabbos and it's the Beis HaMikdash, and we don't have to worry about this Takanas Chacham. But if you had the opportunity to do it mibod yom, if you had the opportunity to take care of this and to circumvent the Isser, so then we don't allow you to violate an Isser D'Rabbanan, even though it's in the Beis HaMikdash, on Shabbos. So let's take, for example, like this. The Mishnah says in Maseches Tamid, it's a Mishnah that is brought in Daf Chav Ches in Maseches Tamid. The Mishnah says, Natal Hamamunas Hamavteach. So you have, in the morning, when they're going around early in the morning, before the sun rises, they have a whole fleet of Kohanim that are ready to do all the different things that need to be done. So the first thing they did was they have a Mamuna. They have someone who's in charge of all the activity in the Beis HaMikdash. He takes the keys, he opens up the door, V'nichnas mi Beis HaMoked La'azara. He walks in and starts walking around the Beis HaMikdash to make sure that everything is in order, everything is where it's supposed to be. V'nichnasu acharav, all the Kohanim that were ready to go for the day, that were ready to do the Avoda and to volunteer, they all came along with him, and they were going to fight it out who is going to have the opportunity to do so. So the Memuna, it says there in the Mishnah, had shtei aviko shel ar biyadam. He had two big pillars of fire that he would walk around with, to go look around to see if everything was in its proper place. So the Tosas Yom Tov there points out that it would sound like this was the process, this is the procedure that was taking place every day of the week. Didn't matter if it was weekday, didn't matter if it was Shabbos. So that means that on Shabbos he would walk around with two pillars, with two torches, with two pillars of fire in his hands in order to look around the Beis HaMikdash like a flashlight. So the Yom Tov points out that it must be that he was allowed to do that, even though that's a clear violation of Tiltul Muktzah. You're not allowed to carry around a fire or candle on Shabbos. That's a violation of Tiltul Muktzah, but yet, says the Tosas Yom Tov, he didn't have to worry about it because we have a principle, Ein Shavuz B'Mikdash. When you're talking about a Din D'Rabbanan, you don't have to worry, and since Muktzah is only Mid'Rabbanan, there was no prohibition of Muktzah in the Beis HaMikdash. That's what the Tosas Yom Tov writes. However, the Rambam points out in Hilchos Beis HaBechira that this whole procedure that the Mishnah describes in Maseches Tamid, that was only the way they did it during the week. But on Shabbos, they didn't have a right to walk around with the candles in their hands. They weren't able to walk around with those torches. Why? Because that was a violation of Tiltul Muktzah. That was an Isser of Tiltul Muktzah, and therefore they weren't allowed to do it. Why were they not allowed to rely on the principle of Ein Shavuz B'Mikdash? Isn't the Tosas Yom Tov argument correct? That we don't worry about Dinam D'Rabbanan when it's Mikdash. You do it, you don't worry about it. So why does the Rambam see a problem with walking around the Beis HaMikdash? You're doing it for the covet of the Beis HaMikdash. You're doing it to show that everything is in its proper place, to make sure that you check on all the procedures that need to be followed through. Why should you be concerned about the fact that you're being metaltal muktzah? Why does the Rambam say that on Shabbos they changed the process of how they did it? So the Kesef Mishnah there points out that the reason why the Rambam says that is because there was a very easy way to circumvent this Isser D'Rabbanan. Namely, you lit candles on Erev Shabbos, you hung them up on the walls, they had certain stations along the way where you could have hung them up, you could have had lights, and there was no reason for the man for the Kohen who was in charge to walk around and hold the lights. There's no reason to violate. And the Kesem Mishnah says, from here you see that whenever you have the opportunity to circumvent the Isser D'Rabbanan and not to violate it, we don't have a right to do that. Ein Shemus B'Migdash is not just a blank check. It doesn't mean you can do whatever you want and not worry about it. It's only if it's in an emergency and you have no other way of getting around the problem. So then we say, Ein Shemus B'Migdash, forget about the Din D'Rabbanan. Do what has to be done to have a functioning Beis HaMikdash. But if you have a very easy way of getting around the problem, namely our case, that's listed in the Mishnah and Tamid, where the Mamuna used to walk around with the candles in his hands, says the Rambam, there's no reason to rely on Ein Shemus B'Migdash because he could have lit those candles before Shabbos and hung them up on the wall. This is also what the Marsha comments in Masechah Sukkah. The Gemara in the end of Masechah Sukkah tells us very unfortunate stories about when the Baisusim, those who were not following in line with all the Chachamim's decrees in the times of the Mishnayos, so the Gemara tells us there that the Baisusim decided to make trouble. They didn't believe in a lot of the Dinim Derabbanan. So they decided one year to make trouble. Everybody came before Shabbos, and they left their Aravos in the Beis HaMikdash. There was a mitzvah of Arav in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Baisusim came along at night and put rocks on top of everybody's Aravos so that it would be Muktzah the next day, because you couldn't remove the rocks. The only way to get your Arava is to remove the rock, but that's Tiltal Muktzah. So the Gemara says they had a problem the next day, and they weren't able to take the Aravos. So the Achronim asked the question, why were they not allowed to do it? Ein Shemus B'Migdash. The whole Muktzah in the first place is only Midirabbanan. So why weren't they allowed to do that? So and the Marsha answers, no, because that's not an emergency situation. You could have set it up before Shabbos where everybody put their Aravas there and everybody made sure that it was put in a designated place, and we could have set someone to be there to make sure that no one's going to cause trouble. And because we didn't do that, so now we're stuck with the problem, says the Marsha. Again, it's not the same as the first case. It's not as easy as the first case, but it's the same idea that the Marsha says, we don't see any reason why we should apply the principle of Ein Shemus B'Migdash when it's not an absolute emergency. And when there was a way to get around it from before Shabbos, there's no reason to allow us to do it now. So take, for example, the Magen Avraham makes a similar point. In Siman Shin Chaf Beis in Hilchos Shabbos, the Magen Avraham talks about selling aliyos, making a raffle on Shabbos to sell aliyos. So the Magen Avraham says, is that permissible? Is it not? Maybe we should have the problem of Gzeira Shema Yichtov. Maybe you're going to write down who won this week, who's going to win next week. So why don't we have the same consideration? Why Mekachu Memkar is not allowed on Shabbos? You're not allowed to do business because Gzeira Shema Yichtov, Din D'Rabbanan, maybe someone's going to write down. Says the Magen Avraham, maybe you shouldn't be allowed to do a raffle either for the Aliyos and for davening for the Yamud. And Kaddish, he says, means they used to switch off like the German Menhagim, that only one person said Kaddish. So the Magen Avraham says, on Shabbos also we have to figure out who's going to be the Abel who has the schus to say Kaddish, everybody else has to sit out. Says the Magen Avraham, I don't see any problem with doing the raffle on Shabbos, there's nothing wrong at all. And he brings a proof to this. What's his proof? Because it says in Maseches Yuma that they would have a pious on Yom Kippur, Mishochet and Mizarek, they would have a raffle that went around to figure out who's going to do this avodah, who's going to do that. So the Magen Avraham says, from there you see that there's nothing wrong with doing a raffle on Shabbos Yom Tov, and it's not a violation of a Din D'Rabbanan. What do you mean it's not a violation? In the Beis HaMikdash, they were allowed to do it because Ein Shemus B'Migdash. That's why it was permissible. How can the Magen Avraham extrapolate from there that we're allowed to do it in our shuls? This is not a Beis HaMikdash. This doesn't have the same rules. We're bound by the Din D'Rabbanan, Gzeira Shema Yichtov. We should be concerned someone's going to write something. So why are we allowed to learn from the proof for the Beis HaMikdash, where the Gemara says in Yuma that they used to make a pious on the Beis HaMikdash? The answer is, say the Acharonim, because in the Beis HaMikdash, you could have circumvented the problem very easily. In the Beis HaMikdash, you wouldn't rely on Ein Shemus B'Migdash if it wasn't absolutely necessary. So from the fact that they did the raffle on Shabbos means that it was absolutely permissible, that there was never a gzeira against doing raffles on Shabbos at all. Because if there would have been a gzeira, they would not have been allowed to do it even in the Beis HaMikdash, because from before Shabbos, or before Yom Tov, they could have already done the raffles and drew the lots and figured out who's going to do the job and who's not going to do the job. From the fact that the Gemara says they did it on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur on Shabbos, it means that obviously there's no malacha involved at all, there's no Issa D'Rabbanan involved at all in having a raffle, and therefore the Magen Avraham assumes that's why it's permissible even in our generation as well.
Pious is not a raffle. They would count the number around.
Right.
And then right at that point they would do the avodah.
Same thing.
It wasn't a raffle if you're raffling off.
No, so the Magen Avraham says, let's say we have all the Avelim standing around in a group and we're trying to figure out who's going to say Kaddish. So if we're going to say, oh, you'll get this week, he'll get next week, why shouldn't we be concerned? Maybe someone's going to write that down. The Gabbai has to keep track of who gets what and which aliyahs. So the Magen Avraham says, no, you see from the Gemara that that's not a concern. The same way they weren't concerned by doing that, by choosing who's going to do in the Beis HaMikdash, to be concerned here either. Ein Shus B'Migdash, how can you learn from the Beis HaMigdash? The answer is no, because in the Beis HaMigdash, from the fact that they did it, it means it was obviously permissible. Had it been an Issur D'Rabbanan, they would not have been allowed to do it, because Ein Shus B'Migdash only allows those activities that I otherwise would not have been able to take care of before Shabbos started or without violating the Issur D'Rabbanan. It's only set aside for when you have an absolute emergency in the Beis HaMikdash. So here, by Rosh Hashanah Shechalias B'Shabbos, obviously we have no other way to circumvent the problem. You couldn't blow the shofar before Rosh Hashanah started. You wouldn't be able to be Mekayim the Mitzvah, and you can't wait till after Rosh Hashanah. So here you are, you're in the Beis HaMikdash, and you're supposed to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah that falls out on Shabbos. The answer is, says our Gemara according to Rashi, that you blow the shofar on Shabbos. Why? Because Ein Shus B'Migdash. You're stuck. This is an emergency case. This is exactly where the Gemara uses the principle of Ein Shus B'Migdash. Now, if we study this rule of Ein Shus B'Migdash a little bit more carefully, we'll see that it's not so simple at all. So let's begin like this. The Pasuk says in Parshas Tetzaveh, V'asisa Bigdei Kodesh La'aron Achicha, L'chabadu L'Sefaris. The Pasuk says that Aaron and all of his children, all the Kohanim that do work in the Beis HaMigdash, L'chabadu L'Sefaris, they should wear the Bigdei Kohuna to be a splendor for them, it should be beautiful for them. And they used to wear those all the time when they were in the Beis HaMikdash. Says the Mishnah and Talmud, what about when they went to sleep? Does it make sense to wear the big dekuna when a Kohen goes to sleep? Kohen also has the right to go to sleep at night. He doesn't have to stay up the whole night. Says the Mishnah, so what did they do when they went to sleep? So the Mishnah says they had pajamas when they went to sleep. They didn't wear their big dekuna. So what did they do with the big dekuna? Where did they put them? So the Mishnah says they used to fold them under their mattresses, under their heads, and they used to sleep on top of the big dekuna that they wore during the day. Okay? That's what the Mishnah says. Ask the Gemara Maseches Yuma Daf Samach Tes, what do you mean? How are they allowed to do that? Don't we know that the Bigdei Kohuna had some shatnez inside of them? So if the Bigdei Kohuna had shatnez, there's a special Gzeres HaKas of that. The Kohanim were allowed to wear shatnez at the time that they're doing the Avodah. But here, you're not doing the Avodah. Here, the Kohen is sleeping. So he's not doing any Avodah. How is he allowed to have shatnez under his mattress, under his pillow? Aren't we concerned about the shatnez that he's having Hanah from? Says the Gemara, nah, maybe you'll say that's not a problem. Why? Because the biblical violation of shatnez is only when you're wearing it. Midrabbanan, they added on not only when you're actually wearing the jacket, wearing the shirt, wearing the pants. Midrabbanan, they added on also not just when you're wearing it, but also if you're going to have a situation where it might fold over on top of you. So therefore, you can't use it as a part of your mattress, because maybe a part of the mattress is going to come over. Maybe one thread, says the Gemara, is going to fold over onto your body, and then you're having hanav from it. So that's already a violation, midrabbanan, of the sister of kilayim. So the Gemara says, how were the Kohanim able to do that? What about the Issur D'Rabbanan of Kilayim? So the Gemara comes to the conclusion that you have to say it wasn't really onto the mattress, really they put it on the side. That's one answer. Or a second answer, says the Gemara, the Bigdei Kohuna were so rough, were so coarse, that nobody was getting hana from having it onto the mattress at all. Even if it went on top of their skin, it wasn't keeping them warm at all, it wasn't comfortable at all to have around when they were sleeping. So the obvious question is, why does the Gemara have to go through all these hoops to figure out how were the Kohanim allowed to have the Bigdei Kohuna under the mattress when they went to sleep at night? Isn't it a violation of Kilayim? So what are we talking about here? Are we talking about a violation midaraisa of Kilayim? No. The violation of Kilayim on a level of daraisa is only when you actually wear the outfit. It's only when you wear the jacket, when you wear the article of clothing. So here, at worst, we're dealing with an Issur D'Rabbanan of Kilayim. That maybe it's going to be under the mattress, and part of it is going to flip up on top of the body, and then we're going to be concerned that you're having hana, that you're deriving pleasure and benefit from the kilayim. But Ein Shus B'Migdash. Don't we have a principle that always applies that in the Beis HaMikdash you're not bound by Isurim D'Rabbanan? So here when the Kohanim are going to sleep, why do they have to worry at all? Why does the Gemara have to come up with answers and say, oh, the big tikkunah were rough and they were coarse and they were made out of this poor quality and therefore it wouldn't be a problem at all? Why do you even have to say that? Why don't you just say very simply that there's no issue at all, because at worst we're dealing with an Isur D'Rabbanan. And when you're talking about an Issur D'Rabbanan in the Beis HaMikdash, if you hear from Arav, it's next door in the main shul, if you're talking about an Issur D'Rabbanan in the Beis HaMikdash, that doesn't apply, we say, Ein Shus B'Migdash. So this is the kasha that the Acharonim ask. How do you explain this story that the Gemara in Yuma picks up on based on the Mishnah that tells us about how the Kohanim went to sleep with the clothing underneath them? Says the Marsha, very simple. The only time we say the principle of Ein Shus B'Migdash is when we're talking about a case which is revolving around Hilchos Shabbos. But when you're talking about any other Issur D'Rabbanan that's not at all connected to Hilchos Shabbos, says the Marsha, those Issurim D'Rabbanan apply even in the Beis HaMikdash. So it's a very limited scope of where we can apply this principle. The only time we say you can disregard Issurim D'Rabbanan in the Beis HaMikdash is when we're talking about something that revolves around Hilchos Shabbos. When it has nothing to do with Hilchos Shabbos, says the Maharsha, we don't say the principle of Ein Shvus B'Mikdash at all, and you actually have to follow all the other Yisurim D'Rabbanan, even in the Beis HaMikdash. That's the answer that the Maharsha gives. And therefore, when it comes to Kilayim, we assume, since that is not at all connected to Hilchos Shabbos, says the Maharsha, therefore we would assume that you have to figure out why the Kohanim were allowed to do what they did. After all, the Yisur Midrabanan of Kilayim should apply to them. Yeah.
So when we talk about Yisur Midrabanan, what is the time frame? In other words, the same rituals were done in the first Beis HaMikdash, when they went up Rabbanan, which was times of prophets and everything else, and second Beis HaMikdash, at a certain point there was Rabbanan. So what is it when at a certain point there was no Yisur Midrabanan, they were doing it because they were doing it, and then there came Yisur Midrabanan. At what point all of a sudden there appeared to be peace with the Rabbanan that said we can't do it?
So how does it set in, you're saying?
Yeah.
That's an interesting question. In Maseches Chulin, the Rosh has a famous comment where he writes, what happened in the times and the generation when they made up the Yisur D'Rabbanan of Gvina Sakum? So one fine day they hang up Pashkevilin all over Mei Sharim. By the way, we convened last night and we decided no one's allowed to have cheese anymore that's made by a non-Jew. So some guy walks out of his house and says, what is this sign up here? What are you talking about? I have some cheese in the fridge. My non-Jewish neighbor made it for me last week. There's nothing wrong with it. It wasn't treif. I was watching him make it. He didn't put any treif ingredients in it. What am I supposed to do with that cheese? What am I supposed to do with it? And for that matter, the Gemara discusses. So what happens when you have a situation in any generation like that? Let's say the Gemara talks about the case when it came along Matan Torah, and now you were no longer allowed to eat treif. So the Gemara wants to know, what happens to the meat that I had beforehand? Now I have a mitzvah of shechita. What about the meat that I had before? So yesterday I had a cow, and I went ahead and I chopped up the cow, and I served it to my whole family, and Moshe Rabbeinu ate over at my house yesterday. He was there for the barbecue. Now today Moshe Rabbeinu comes over and he tells me, oh, by the way, you have a new mitzvah of shechita. What do you mean? You were here yesterday. You told me that the steaks were kosher. You ate in my house. What am I supposed to do with the rest of the animal? So the Gemara discusses, what was the status of those pieces of meat that you killed beforehand? You weren't allowed to eat it while it was alive. That's Eivrim Menachai. So the Gemara wants to know, what about those pieces of meat that are left over from before the Gzera came into play, but now I'm living in a time after the Gzera and I still have some leftovers? So the Rush writes, why are we talking about such a discussion? It has no relevance. It's never going to happen again. Once we have the mitzvah of Shechita, we have the mitzvah of Shechita. Says the Rush, the reason why it is relevant is because if you have exactly what you're asking, if you have Gzera Midrabanan that comes into play in a later generation, what do I do with all the items that I had around my house beforehand? Let's say the Gvina Sakum. So I had my non-Jewish neighbor make cheese for me, very expensive cheese. Now all of a sudden I wake up one fine day and the Chacham tell me I'm not allowed to eat it. So what do I do with the stuff that I had from before? Mikana lahaba, you're going to tell me I shouldn't go and buy it, but what about everything that I had from beforehand? That's a very important question that's discussed in regard to that rush. Again, it's a question that applies in general by Yisurim D'Rabbanan. How do we look at an Issa D'Rabbanan? Does it mean that it goes even Lamafreya, goes even backward, or do we say it's only Mikana Lahaba? From here on in, you have to abide by the rules, but from anything that was there beforehand, already was stamped with Moshe Rabbeinu's Hechsher. After all, he ate by my barbecue yesterday. He ate the non-kosher animal that he's telling me now is not kosher. Yesterday was kosher. So these are all very important questions. So again, the Maharsha writes over here that the reason why the Gemara has to explain why it is that by Kilayim they weren't allowed to wear it, even though it's only an Issa D'Rabbanan, we should have said Ein Shvus B'Mikdash. The Maharsha, the reason why it is a concern is because the only time Ein Shvus B'Mikdash is applied is when we're talking about Hilchos Shabbos. However, when we're dealing with any other Isurim, any other Issa D'Rabbanan, we assume that Ein Shvus B'Mikdash cannot be applied. Now, this Maharsha is very questionable. Some Rishonim assume that the Maharsha is incorrect. Rashi himself writes in Maseches Me'ila that the Maharsha is incorrect. I mean, he's not responding to the Maharsha, but he applies the principle of Ein Shvus B'Mikdash to something totally outside of the purview of Hilchos Shabbos, and therefore this Maharsha is not assumed to be the proper answer. So how exactly do you explain why the Gemara has to go out of its way to figure out why is it that the Kohanim were allowed to fold up their clothing at night and wear it underneath them? Isn't that an Isur Kilayim? So the Gemara goes through a whole explanation to say why it should be justified. Why do you have to justify it? What about Ein Shvus B'Mikdash? So the very simple answer that the Acharonim give, the Maariz Chiyas gives it in the back of the Gemara in Yuma, very simple answer. What's the reason? What's the fundamental underpinning of this halacha of Ein Shvus B'Mikdash? Why do we assume that all of a sudden when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash, nobody has to follow the Dinim D'Rabbanan? Why? Why do I have to follow the Dinim D'Rabbanan everywhere else except for the Beis HaMikdash? Says the Gemara, the answer is, because the reason why, I'm sorry, the Rishonim explained the reason why is because Kohanim's Rizim Heim. You're right. The Chacham have to make safeguards for most of us because we're not so careful. If they're not going to figure out how to make a barrier for me, I'm going to end up violating the Yisur D'Oraisa. However, when you're talking about a Beis HaMikdash, you have Kohanim that are very alert. The Kohanim are very vigilant over every halacha, over everything that's going on. They're not going to make the mistake. They're not going to carry outside by mistake. They're not going to be Yavi Renu, Dalet Amos, B'Shus HaRabim. And therefore, we don't have to worry. And that's why when it comes to Gzeiros Midrabanan, we assume in the Beis HaMikdash, we're not bound by the Gzeiros Midrabanan because no one's going to make the mistake. You have the Beis Din HaGadol there. You have the Kohanim there. They're all very learned. What else are they doing all day? They're sitting and learning. So therefore, we have nothing to be concerned about when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash at all. So therefore, that only applies when the Kohanim are awake and alert and vigilant. But when the Kohanim are sleeping, says the Maariv Chiyus, and they're not able to be careful about the Yisur Kilayim, so then we do have to be concerned. That, says the Maariv Chiyus, is really getting to what the fundamental understanding of Ein Shavuos B'Mikdash is all about. The whole understanding that we have is, why do we assume you can disregard all the Yisurim D'Rabbanan when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash? It's only because we're assuming the Kohanim are going to be attentive to every halacha, to every sifkatan, to everything that you have to do, and they're never going to make a mistake. But here where everybody's sleeping, of course they're going to make a mistake. So the whole halacha of Ein Shavuos B'Mikdash wouldn't apply in that situation at all. So that's a very important point to be aware of as well. When we talk about the klal of Ein Shavuos B'Mikdash, it's important to point out that with regard to Hilchos Shabbos, not everything is allowed in the Beis HaMikdash. Even when you're talking about Hilchos Shabbos, let's say the Maharsha argued, Ein Shavuos B'Mikdash only applies to Hilchos Shabbos. Even within Hilchos Shabbos, we find that not everything is included in that heter. Not everything is able to be ignored just because you're in the Beis HaMikdash. So what I mean by that is as follows. The Gemara says in Menachos Daf Tzadi Vav that they used to do something called the Seder HaKanim Shel Lechem HaPanim. Does anyone have a question? You had a question? Oh, you're saying if they're never going to make a mistake, so what's the problem? Again, a mistake can always happen. So if it's easily avoidable, so you avoid it. But if it's not easily avoidable, the Rambam writes, why get involved in the Shaila at all? Ein Shavuos B'Mikdash is a heter. Yeah. That's a good question. Meaning maybe from the outset this whole halacha didn't apply when it came to the Beis HaMikdash. I don't think so. I think the understanding is it did apply everywhere universally, and then we extracted the Beis HaMikdash from the equation. That's a general understanding, I think.
Okay, who are we? If we are Derabanan, right, then by definition, to be right, it was from the beginning, it was made for everybody but the Beis HaMikdash. When you're saying it was made universal, but then extracted, but then who extracted? That would be the Rabbanan.
You're saying when did that happen?
Yeah.
I don't know. It could be. I don't know. Could be. I'm just not sure about that. The reason why I'm not sure that that's correct is because if that would be the case, then you would say Ein Shavuos B'Mikdash is not Techuya, it's Hutra. You would say, even if it was Efshar Mibod Yom, it was never applied to the Beis HaMikdash at all, so you don't have to worry about it. But that's not the assumption that we have. Here the Kesem Mishnah argues, if it was able to be done before Shabbos, you shouldn't violate Shabbos. Why? The whole Din D'Rabbanan in the first place was never said in the Beis HaMikdash. So that's why I think...
That's based on the Rambam. So that's based on explaining what the Rambam meant, then applying it.
Right.
But it could be that there are other shittos that don't say it's... that say it's Hutra.
It could be. Could be. Yeah, they point out from the Mordechai like that as well. They have other Mekaris, other Rishonim that seem to indicate that way as well. So let's say Tosa has a Kasha. Do we apply this principle of Ein Shavuos B'Mikdash to everything with regard to Hilchos Shabbos? Every Yisur, every Malacha, any Yisur D'Rabbanan is able to be brushed away by this principle of Ein Shavuos B'Mikdash? Tosa has the Kasha. We have a Gemara Menachos that says, Sidur HaKanim Shelechem HaPanim. They used to set up the Lechem HaPanim on the Shulchan. And those poles, they used to take it apart in order to put the new pans in, whatever it was. So it says that's not Dochas HaShabbos. You're not allowed to do Shabbos because it's Tilto Muktzah. To take the poles out and to take all the parts of the Shulchan apart and put it back together, that would be Tilto Muktzah. So Tosas asked the Kasha Maseches Shabbos, and Tosas asked the Kasha Maseches Erevin. Tosas asked the Kasha Maseches Menachos, and a Maseches Sukkah. He has the same Kasha everywhere. Why shouldn't that be Dochas HaShabbos? At worst, you're going to violate an Isra of Tilto Muktzah. So what's the problem? Ein Shavuos B'Mikdash. Why can't I set up the Lechem HaPanim on Shabbos the same way I would do it any other day of the week? What's the issue? What's the concern? What, are you going to violate Tilta Muksa? Tilta Muksa is a Dindu Rabbanan. So at worst, you're going to violate a Dindu Rabbanan. Ain't Shus of Migdash. We shouldn't have to be concerned at all. So Tosis gives an answer, which is very bothersome. Again, it's bothersome not because I have a kasha on it, it's bothersome because it leaves us nowhere. Tosis says the answer is, Pa'amim Gazru Shvusim of Migdash. Sometimes they said, you have to follow the Dindu Rabbanan of the Beis HaMikdash, and sometimes they didn't say. And Tosis says they didn't give us the rule of when an Issa Rabbanan does apply in the Beis HaMikdash and when an Issa Rabbanan does not apply in the Beis HaMikdash. So now what are we left with? Nothing. Now every time you have a case and you're trying to figure out, does the rule apply here, does it not? Tosis said already, well, we don't know the rule. We don't know when the Chacham decided that the Dindu Rabbanan should apply in the Beis HaMikdash. We don't know when they decided it should not apply in the Beis HaMikdash. So this Tosis is very problematic. It causes major problems for us to try and figure out what is the Hagdara. How do you clearly delineate the rules of when do we assume Ein Shus B'Migdash will apply and when Ein Shus B'Migdash might not apply? So take, for example, we have a halacha, the Mishnah in Maseches Beitza has a machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. The machlokas is about about bringing shlamim on yamtiv. If you're going to bring a carbon shlamim, a voluntary carbon on yamtiv, so the Beis Shammai are of the opinion, Ein somchan aleim. You're not allowed to do the smicha on the carbon on yantiv. And Beis Hillel is of the opinion, if you're allowed to bring the carbon, you're allowed to do it all the way. You're allowed to do the smicha on it also. So Rashi says there, what's Beis Shammai concerned about? What are you going to do if you do smicha on the carbon? What's wrong? What malacha is that? So Rashi says it's called mishtamish b'balei chayim. The same way the Mishnah says in Beitza, you're not allowed to ride on an animal on Shabbos, that's mishtamish b'balei chayim. So too, you're not allowed to put all your weight on an animal either, because that's called being mishtamish b'balei chayim. That's what Rashi says there. And therefore we assume that Beis Hillel is of the opinion, I'm sorry, again, we don't paskin like Beis Shammai, but Beis Shammai is of the opinion that you're not allowed to do smicha on the carbon on Yom Tif, because that's going to be a violation of the Issa D'Rabbanan. So the Mardechai, the Rishonim, the Balei Tosfos has the kasha. What do you mean? What's the problem? Ein Shus HaMikdash. This whole halacha of Ein Mishtamshim B'Balei Chayim is an Issa D'Rabbanan. The whole thing is Gzeira M'D'Rabbanan. So why are we concerned? Why does Beis Shammai say you're not allowed to do smicha, you're not allowed to lean on the animal on Shabbos or Yom Tif? At worst, what you're going to do is be Mishtamshim B'Balei Chayim. You're going to violate an Issa D'Rabbanan. If you violate an Issa D'Rabbanan, there's no problem. Ein Shus HaMikdash. So how do you explain this? So that's the kasha of the Mardechai. So the Mardechai answers, well, maybe the only time we would allow this principle of Ein Shus B'Migdash, when are you allowed to bypass the halacha? That's only when we're talking about a carbon sibur, when it's something that everybody's obligated to do together. But over here, where you have each individual person is going to come and do the smicha, maybe that's going to lead you individually to do something worse. So when it's up to you, we say, yeah, you got to follow all the Dinim D'Rabbanan. When it's the official business of the Beis HaMikdash, doing it on behalf of all of Klal Yisrael, then you say, okay, Ein Shus HaMikdash would be able to be applied, but otherwise, if it's just you personally, you wouldn't be able to use that principle. And this Sfasemes has all these kinds of questions. He says, what do you mean? What about Tekiyah Shofar on Rosh Hashanah Shechalis B'Shabbos? That's not a obligation that's on behalf of the entire Jewish people. That's an obligation that each person has on their own. So if the Mardechai is correct, that the only time we say Ein Shus B'Migdash is when it's something that's a communal obligation altogether, so then how do you explain Rashi and our Gemara? Rashi says in our Gemara that when Rosh Hashanah is Chaliyas B'Shabbos, we assume you're allowed to blow shofar, even though it's Shabbos, in the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Because Ein Shus B'Migdash. No one's going to make a mistake. Kohanim's Rizimheim, they know to be careful. They know to make sure not to violate the Yisra D'Araisa of Hotzah. Nothing to worry about at all. What do you mean? What do you mean the Kohanim ought to be careful? This is not a chiyuv that is mutel on the entire body of the Beis HaMikdash. It's an obligation that is upon each and every individual person. Well, if that's the understanding, if that's the case, how do you explain Rashi and our Gemara? This is a very big problem. This Sfasemes discusses in our Gemara. Doesn't give such a clear answer, but I think it's a very important kasha. If the Mordechai and the Balei Tosfos are correct, that's the reason why Beis Shammai said you're not allowed to do the smicha on the carbon, because since you're only an individual and Ein Shus B'Migdash doesn't apply to individuals, so how do you explain why Ein Shus B'Migdash can be applied when it comes to the mitzvah of Tekiyah Shofar and Rosh Hashanah? Yeah? So let's say, take for example, so you want to argue that maybe it takes on the status of a carbon sibur, the same kind of thing, because everybody's doing it together. What if I happen to go to the bathroom for a minute and I miss the Tekiyah Shofar? Right? So I stepped out in the middle of Musaf in the Beis HaMikdash, And now I missed the tekiah shofar. Now I come back. I turn to the guy next to me. I say, would you mind blowing the shofar for me? I missed a few tekiahs over there. I'm not going to be yotze the mitzvah. Would I be allowed to blow in the Beis HaMikdash? What would you say?
I guess they didn't make a distinction. Okay.
So I don't know. I would have said, reading our Mishnah, that you're in the Beis HaMikdash. Nothing to worry about. You're not going to make a mistake. There are Kohanim all around. If anyone sees you walking outside, they're going to remind you not to make the mistake. But is that really true? Again, that would be up for discussion in light of this Mordechai that we just mentioned. Yeah. Right. Right. This is all part of the discussion. The Balei Atosis have the kasha. What's the difference between lulav and esrog and between shofar? Again, very, very intricate halachas here. Take for another example. We have the story when the Kohen Gadol is readying himself for the avodah on Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says in Maseches Yuma that leading up to Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol has to go through a whole process of tahara. What does he have to do? So it says that he was separated from his wife for 7 days, and they would look after him very carefully, that nothing should happen, he shouldn't become tamei. And the Kohen Gadol, mazin alav may offer hapara, it says, may efer hapara, they used to sprinkle on him from the paraduma on shlishi and shvi, they used to go ahead as if he was tamei. Now, why did they do that? The reason why, says the Gemara, is because Shema Nitma b'meis v'lo yada. It's really a din d'rabbanan. He's not Tameh. He knows he's not Tameh. He's a Kohen. He didn't go to a Levaya. He didn't go to a cemetery. He knows that he's not Tameh at all. So yet, we go and make him go through the process of Tahara with the Efer Par. Why does he have to do that, says the Gemara? Because maybe he touched a dead body and he didn't realize. So it's a chashash m'd'rabbanan. It's a din d'rabbanan. That's what the Kohen has to do. Says the Gemara, what happens if Chol Yom Shabbos? What if Shabbos falls out to be the third or the seventh day when he's supposed to have the paraduma water sprinkled on him? So the Rambam quotes the Gemara. The Rambam says the answer is that dochan asahazaya, we're going to push it off to another day because we don't do the efer par on Shabbos. We don't sprinkle someone with the paraduma water on Shabbos. Why not? What's the malach involved in that? What's the issue? So the Gemara says the answer is the problem is we're concerned shami avirenu. Maybe you're going to take the water, you're going to carry it outside, you're not going to realize, oh, it's outside. The same problem that we have by the lulav and the shofar and everything else, the Gemara says you're not allowed to sprinkle on the Kohen Gadol when the Yom HaShvi or Yom HaShlishi falls out on Shabbos, because Shema Yavirenu. Other Achronim give other reasons, which is a major problem in and of itself. Why are the Achronim giving reasons for this when the Gemara itself gave us the real reason? The Gemara says the reason you're not allowed to go ahead and sprinkle the Kohen Gadol with the Efer HaPara on the days leading up to Yom Kippur, if it falls out on Shabbos, you're not allowed to do that either because, says the Gemara, simply, because Shemi Avirun, you're going to carry it outside. So why do the Achronim come up with new reasons? Some Achronim say because it's Mesakin Mane, because the Kohen was not fit to do the Avodah on the Beis HaMikdash before you do this. So now you're making him into a complete being. Why are they making up new reasons? Not only that, some Achronim say a different reason, maybe it's because Tilto Muktzah. Since this water is not allowed to be used for anything else, only be used for this purpose. And right now on Shabbos, you have no reason to use it, so therefore we assume this is muktzah. It's set aside for that purpose and that purpose only. You have nothing else that you can use it for, so therefore that would be muktzah. Whatever it is, the real reason is like the Gemara says, or like Rashi says, or like the other Achronim say, whatever the reason is, but basically this is the rule. You're not allowed to sprinkle the Efer Parah on the Kohen Gadol in the days leading up to Yom Kippur, because we're concerned that you're going to violate an Issa D'Rabbanan either of Tilto Muktzah or of Mesakin Mane, or you're going to violate the Issa D'Rabbanan of Shema Yavirenu. Maybe you're going to carry it outside. So the obvious kasha that the Achronim are all bothered with is, what do you mean? Ein Shvuz B'Mikdash. The whole reason why I'm sprinkling the Kohen Gadol is that he should be fit to do the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. I want him to be ready for Yom Kippur. So now it happens to be that Shabbos falls out here. Why am I concerned with the Issa D'Rabbanan? What's the problem? At worst, it's an Issa D'Rabbanan. And therefore, if it's only an Issa D'Rabbanan, okay, so it's an Issa D'Rabbanan. Ain't supposed to make this anyway. What's the problem? What's the concern? So some Achronim answer over here. Complicated answer. Some Achronim say the answer is, where was the Kohen Gadol at this time when they sprinkled the water on him? He was in the room called the Lishkas Parhedron. Was the Lishkas Parhedron officially a part of the Azara, or was it considered to be a part of the Harabayas? That's a major machlokas harishonim. Rashi and the Rabbit have a machlokas. What's the status of this room where the Kohen Gadol went aside for that week before Yom Kippur? So some Achronim say the only time we say Ein Shvuz B'Mikdash is only in the Beis HaMikdash in the Azara, not on the Harabayas. Why not? Why shouldn't it be on the Harabayas also? Why wouldn't you say this whole fundamental principle of Ein Shus Migdash is because you have so many Kohanim running around. You have a Beis HaMikdash there. You have everybody who knows everything. Why would you differentiate between the Beis HaMikdash proper, the Azara, and the Har HaBayis that surrounds the Beis HaMikdash? You have the same people roaming around. So that's a very problematic answer, and it's hard to accept. If who's Tamei? Tamei Meis, yeah. He's allowed on the Har HaBayis. Yeah, just not allowed in the Azara. So the Shaar HaMelech answers the Kasha as follows. The Shaar HaMelech writes, don't say that it's because we don't know if this is the Azara and Ein Shus Migdash only applies in the Azara. No. The real answer, says the Shaar HaMelech, is because the only time we say Ein Shus Migdash, you're allowed to violate an Issa D'Rabbanan when it comes to the Avodah and the Beis HaMikdash, that's only, like the Gemara says, a Shvus Krova. That's only when it's something that is Nogeya for this Shabbos. I'm allowed to violate an Issa D'Rabbanan on Shabbos for the purposes of having an avoda that's functioning this Shabbos. But to do a shvus rechoka, like the Gemara says, you're going to do something now in order that you should gain something later on at a further date. That's not allowed. You're not allowed to violate an issa d'rabbanan now, even though you're in the Beis HaMikdash. You're not allowed to violate an issa d'rabbanan today in the Beis HaMikdash in order to fulfill something later on. And therefore, says the Shaar HaMelech, this would be considered a shvus krova or a shvus rechoka. What would you say? Rechoka. The reason why I want to sprinkle the ashes onto the body of the Kohen Gadol is not because I need him for the Avodah today. For the Avodah today, I can find someone else. The reason is because Yom Kippur is coming up in another few days. I want to make sure he's fit for that, says the Shaar HaMelech. That's what we consider to be a Shvus Rechoka. That's not for an immediate need. That's not for something that's today. And therefore, when it comes to that, says the Shaar HaMelech, you don't have a right to say that we would bypass an Issa D'Rabbanan, even though it's in the Beis HaMikdash, because, after all, a Shvus Rechoka lo hitiru. Yeah. No, this was all a chashash midrabbanan that maybe he touched the dead body that made him tummy.
For that, we would still go and say, wouldn't that also be a reason not to do it on Shabbos because
you're saying it's not vada in the first place that you're going to accomplish anything. Interesting. Maybe that's a good answer. I mean, the only time we say Ein Shus B'Migdash is when you're certainly going to do the intended result. But over here, where it's not even clear that you need to do what you're doing, who said that Ein Shus B'Migdash would apply? That's a great answer. I don't know. I didn't see any of the Achronim say that, but that sounds very good.
Takana to do something when you can't do it.
What?
Books is with Rabbonim and doing the sprinkling is Rabbonim.
Yeah.
So what they do want to contradict the other.
That's the problem. You have a lot of Dinim D'Rabbonim that are coming and clashing at one another over here. Anyway, so the problem is over here, the Turi Evan asks a very simple question. The example my father always gives when we learn the Gemara about Ein Shus B'Migdash, when I learn with him, so my father always says, so you'll say Ein Shus B'Migdash, it means that a Kohen Gadol is allowed to do whatever he wants, a Kohen is allowed to do whatever he wants while he's in the middle of doing the Avodah? No. It means only if it's Litzorach HaAvodah, you're allowed to do it. Only if it pertains to the Avodah that he needs to do, so then he's allowed to violate the Issa D'Rabbanan. The example my father always gives is, just because Ein Shus B'Migdash, you're going to tell me he's allowed to smoke a cigarette. Again, smoking a cigarette is probably an Issa D'Araisa. So the example always was a question to me, why my father used that example. But anyway, what?
It wasn't 50 years ago, so your father could still give that example. You can't.
Why was it not 50 years ago?
Just purely from the general thought process of whether you should or shouldn't be.
Okay, so the question is, that's lighting a fire on Shabbos. So anyway, whatever it is, my father always says, you don't allow Ein Shus B'Migdash, doesn't allow you to violate something that doesn't pertain to the Avodah. Just because it will make you more comfortable doesn't mean you're allowed to do it. So the question is, if you assume that the whole principle of Ein Shus B'Migdash only applies and can only be used and applied when we're talking about something that's going to enhance the Avodah, when we're talking about something that is actually going to help me do the Avodah properly, how can Rashi in his right mind explain our Torah? How does Rashi say that you're allowed to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, Shechalias B'Shabbos in the Beis HaMikdash because Ein Shus B'Migdash, Dina D'Rabbanan don't apply? That's not true. We don't have a blank check in the Beis HaMikdash to violate any Issa D'Rabbanan that we want. It's only if it's the Tzarach HaAvodah. Blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah has nothing to do with the Avodah. Blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah we do because the Torah says on Rosh Hashanah you have to blow the shofar. If that's the case, what's the Havamina? How does Rashi say, what's the Havamina, what's the Maskana? How does Rashi say that the whole rationale, the whole reason why our Gemara allows you to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, Shechalis B'Shabbos in the Beis HaMikdash is because Ein Shus HaMikdash? This has nothing to do with Ein Shus HaMikdash. We don't allow you to violate an Issa D'Rabbanan that's not connected at all to the din of the Avodah that has to be performed in the Beis HaMikdash on that day. So how do you explain this? Ask the Turi Evan, how do you explain our Gemara? What does our Gemara mean? That Ein Shus Hamikdash is the reason why we're allowed to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, Shechalis, B'Shabbos, and the Beis Hamikdash. So some Achronim answer as follows. Some Achronim say, based on Ramban. The Ramban has a drasha that is printed in one of the newer svarim that they have from the Ramban. The Ramban writes as follows. He says, it seems that he's trying to answer this question. He doesn't ask the question, but he's trying to answer it. He says, when you're doing the tkiya shofar in the Beis Hamikdash on Rosh Hashanah Shechalis B'Shabbos, k'shem shetokim sham kama tkiyas al hakarban, says Ramban, since you had to blow shofar anyway for the fact that you shefting karbanos, every time you shefting karban, you have to blow chatzotzos, you have to blow a shofar, therefore he says, token af lazu. You're allowed to blow for this as well. Now, the Ramban is addressing the question, doesn't explain exactly what he means, but the Ramban is basically explaining, Rashi over here says that the whole rationale for blowing the shofar on Shabbos and the Beis Hamikdash is because Ein Shus Hamikdash. What do you mean? This has nothing to do with the Avodah. The answer says the Ramban is no. Either the Ramban means to say that we don't have a concern of Shema Yavirenu to go teach someone, you're not going to run away to teach, to have someone teach you how to blow the shofar because you're blowing shofar anyway for all the other Avodah and their Karbanos. Either that's what he means. Or what the Ramban probably means is differently. What the Ramban probably means is on Rosh Hashanah, when I blow the shofar for the Tzarech HaKarbanos, part of the Avodah on Rosh Hashanah of blowing for the Karbanos is also to incorporate the shofar that I'm blowing for the fact that today is Rosh Hashanah. Therefore, the Ramban says, once you're allowed to do that because of the Tzarech HaKarbanos, you're allowed to do this as well, and you don't have to be concerned about this principle of Ein Shvuz B'Migdash, whether it applies or not. I'm sorry, you don't have to be concerned of this Dirin D'Rabbanon of Shem Yavirenu, because we can rely on the regular old principle of Ein Shvuz B'Migdash. You'll ask me, Ein Shvuz B'Migdash shouldn't apply. This is not something that pertains to the Avodah, says the Ramban. No, it does pertain to the Avodah. Lulav and Esrog, what? Lulav and Esrog does not apply. We don't allow you. The problem with Lulav and Esrog, what do you mean? Is also Shema Yavirenu. The problem with Lulav and Esrog is also Shema Yavirenu.
You're not going to take it to somebody to figure out how to learn it.
No, but you might carry it outside into the street without realizing that you're passing through Rosh Hashanah Rabbit. Yeah, so I just have to daven Marv, so let's just break here. But Tosis does ask the Kasha here on Chaf Tesam Beis. Tosis tries to figure out how do you compare and contrast Lulav and Esrog with the story of Shofar here, and whether or not the rule should be the same or perhaps a little bit different. Let me just ask. Next